Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT, where Charlotte turns for severe weather information.
Well, good morning, Carolinas, and Happy New Year to all of you. You are listening to Carolina Focus on News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT, 107.9 The Link, and 102.5 610 Sports Radio WFNZ. Carolina Focus is also available as a podcast on WBT. And as we start out this new year, let's go and visit the battleship North Carolina. Yes, indeed, down there in Wilmington. With us this morning is Kim Sincox. She is the Museum Services Director for USS North Carolina. And Sharon Thorsland caught up with her.
Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us here on Carolina Focus. I'm Sharon Thorsland. Well, as the new year approaches here, I'm sure a lot of you are still looking for things that you can do safely. And in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic, there are places you can still go safely. There are also a lot of really neat things you can do online. And one of those things has to do with our very own battleship North Carolina, which is down in Wilmington, of course, and a lot of you may have visited the ship in the past. And now they're going to have a really neat new series of online presentations called Meet the Showboat, and you can learn more about the famous ship. So joining us today, we have Kim Sincox. She is the Museum Services Director for the battleship, and she just happened to grow up in Gastonia right down the road from us. So Kim, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Sharon. Delighted to be here.
Now, I wanted to first ask you a little bit about the history of the USS North Carolina, because I'm sure a lot of people in our state have heard all about it, and maybe they've been there, but they might not know the details. How did the ship come about, and what was it first used for?
The battleship was the first of the fast battleships built for World War II. Now, of course, when they were designing her, there was no World War II yet, but, you know, there had been a shipbuilding holiday following World War I, and what that means is some of the countries got together. This was in 1922, following World War I. They decide, let's cut back building these big capital ships. Those were things like a battleship. Those were the major naval weapons of the time. So why don't we just scale back on building those, and let's try to avert, you know, conflict and another arms race and that sort of stuff. So that was what happened following World War I. And indeed, there actually was a North Carolina being built. She would have been the BB-52. There were three battleships being built. These countries come together. They sign an agreement. And our three battleships, we destroyed. Okay, so time passes. And then Congress decided, no, it's about time to go ahead and start building up, our naval program a bit. So they go ahead and approve some building of some ships, and one of which is going to be the North Carolina. Since they'd already planned to name a ship North Carolina, they decide that the hull number 55 would be also the North Carolina. It had been 16 years since they had built a battleship. Very exciting. The country's in the Depression. Here it was, the Great Depression, right? A lot of people out of work. So you can imagine that naval yard, the New York Naval Shipyard, is very excited to be building this wonderful new battleship. Very sexy, you know, great paying jobs. So they're building her. They lay the keel down in October of 1937.
Okay.
It took 3.5 years to build her. She's commissioned in April of 1941. Now, Europe is already at war, right? So it's good timing to have this big ship coming along. She is the North Carolina class because she's the first one built of her design. She had a sister ship, the Washington. So they're both built. They're both called the North Carolina class. There's only like maybe 3 weeks, maybe about 3 weeks apart. They're very close in terms of when 3 weeks or 3 months. Now, I have to remember, but very close that Washington follows us. But we get all the press. We're the first, you know what I mean? All that wonderful press comes out, greatest sea weapon, blah, 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 you know, very exciting, lots and lots of publicity. And after we're, you know, commissioned, which means you're officially joining the Navy. You go on your shakedown cruise. That's when you got to test out all the equipment and everything, right? Make sure everything works well, guns fire well, start training your crew. And we were in New York. And so people are seeing us going in and out of New York Harbor being tested. And Walter Winchell, who was a well-known journalist at the time, nicknames us the showboat. We're just the showboat of the Navy, man, coming in and out of New York and stuff. Now, that was actually a derisive term to a degree. And showboat, the musical, was actually in revival that time on Broadway.
Okay.
And so he's kind of nicknaming us after this showboat, which gave theater performances and all that kind of stuff up and down the river. So it's a little bit of a put down. However, what's sort of funny is at one point in our shakedown cruise, we're heading down to Norfolk and we're going to meet our sister ship, the Washington. She got there first. And when we pull in, her band, and you have to know that all the battleships had bands. We're talking big bands, you know. But,
wow.
So their band comes out on deck and their band start playing, "Here comes the showboat, here comes the..." and I'm sure to make fun of us, we're kind of, you know, poke at us a little bit, but it stuck. And we said, "Yeah, we are the showboat. We're the best, man." So that's how we got our nickname. And we were the, as I said, the first ship along with the Washington. So we're on, when Pearl Harbor happens, December 7th, 1941, we're actually in New York City. And our fellas are out on the town having a great time, enjoying being in the city. You can imagine these farm boys from Iowa and North Carolina and all over. And, man, they're in the Big Apple. You know, it's just like some of the wonderful World War II movies you see. Mm-hmm. I think it's On the Town with the three sailors taking Liberty, New York, and everything. It's that kind of thing. So they're having a good time. And suddenly people are telling them, "Hey, sailor, you got to report back to your ship. Pearl Harbor's been bombed." I mean, a lot of people probably had no clue where Pearl Harbor even was.
Yeah.
I mean, Hawaii, of course, was not even a state at that point. So somewhere out in the South Pacific where you may not, I'm sure they would have heard of Hawaii.
Sure.
But how much people knew about Pearl Harbor, I don't know. But guys all over the town are hurrying back to their ship, and everything just changed overnight. You know, you can imagine the atmosphere changes overnight. They continue to go on their shakedown, the North Carolina does, and it is, let's see, July 11th of 1942 before the battleship actually arrives at Pearl Harbor.
Wow, okay.
And the welcome she receives there is astounding. America has been on the losing end of the stick for the first 6 months of the war. The Japanese are just going gangbusters, conquering new territories and stuff as they spread out across the Pacific, and we're not doing that well. So when the battleship arrives, these people, they see the ship rounding the corner, and here she comes, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, you know, this massive, gorgeous ship is coming," and they feel like there's hope.
Yeah.
They said they felt so abandoned, you know, and things aren't going well. And when she comes and she's so massive and she's so gorgeous and her decks are bristling with all these guns and her crew is in their whites and they're standing proud at the railings. And they said people spontaneously start coming up from below decks. People are cheering. Bells are going off. You know, everything you can, it's just going crazy. They're so hopeful at that point in Pearl. I mean, ships are still sunken.
Right.
You know, they haven't been recovered yet. Bodies are still, you know, everything. It's still awful. It's not like now where we know, thanks to, you know, our cell phones, everybody knows, seems to know everything so quickly.
Right.
And back then, you know, you could actually keep things kind of under wraps a bit. And our guys were just shocked at what they saw. And they were also they were very humble because they said, you know, we haven't even done anything yet. And and they're all cheering us like we're heroes. So that's how things started out for us. So that's July 11th. August the 24th, we're in our first battle engagement. And we do lose one sailor. But one of the things that happens is when they built and designed the ship, they built us to slug it out with other ships.
Okay.
Big, mighty battleships that duke it out with other battleships. Well, there were people that said, "Well, hang on a minute, people. I think it's going to be about airplanes. You know, airplanes are developing and things are changing." And, you know, And there were people that thought about that. So there's a little bit of, you know, debate about, is it going to be about aircraft and aircraft carriers? I mean, what about battleships? But in that first battle, we protect the Enterprise. You know, she comes under serious attack, and we're able to shoot down airplanes and fend off airplanes and put up this massive barrage of shrapnel over her, like a protective umbrella. And it's just an amazing thing. It's the battle, I believe, was like 8 minutes or something.
Wow.
And it just changed everything. So instead of being this, we're going to slug it out with other battleships, suddenly we become the protector of aircraft carriers.
Okay.
And our role throughout the war was going to be, we protect aircraft carriers. Before the Marines go in and land, and the Army, we're going to bombard islands to help prepare for the Marines to go in and the Army to go in. And we're also going to take care of our destroyers, because we're traveling in a group. So the carrier is in the middle. Okay. Battleships and heavy cruisers are surrounding her. Then there's a ring of destroyers and destroyer escorts. And we've got 2 million gallons of fuel on this ship.
Wow.
So we are like a giant floating service station.
Wow.
For the destroyers and the small ships. We're also basically like an all-purpose everything. We can provide food for destroyers. They can come over to our sick bay for the dentist and doctors. We can fix things in our machine shop. We're just an all-purpose. We're a city. We're a floating city. So we have things that the smaller little towns might need, because we take care of them. And they bring us mail and movies, which we greatly appreciate. So that's kind of, you know, that's that. So we get there. We have our first engagement. That's August. And then September 15, we're actually torpedoed.
Okay.
By accident.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. It was crazy. It was just crazy. So at that point, we're with the WASP. There's two carrier groups, task forces going together. And the one we're in, we're guarding the WASP. There's another group that's around the Hornet. And I'm sorry, we're with the Hornet. The WASP is in the other group.
Okay.
So, pardon me. So anyway, so the WASP is in one group. We're with the Hornet. And there's a Japanese submarine, the I-19. And she sees this WASP, this carrier, big juicy target, sends out a spread of 6 torpedoes.
Okay.
And of the 6, 3 of them do hit the WASP.
Wow.
And the Japanese torpedoes are so good and so powerful, and we didn't realize how good they were. So those torpedoes go all the way through all the ships in the WASP group, and they head over to the Hornet group. But no, we don't know this. And then these messages are going out like, torpedo headed for you, and, well, wait, who sent that signal, and who's you? Where's it going? And this is a Sunday afternoon, and we're all like, what? You know, and everybody's on the lookout to see what's going on. And 2 of those torpedoes actually hit 2 ships in the Hornet group. So they hit the destroyer O'Brien, and then one hits us.
Okay.
And it blows a hole 15 by 32 feet.
Wow.
Yes, an enormous hole. That's the outside. The hole got bigger when it went in. But the battleship is built with what they call a torpedo protection system. And since we're not visual, this is a little harder to explain. But if you think of the ship, it's like she had on below, there's an armor belt to protect us from incoming projectiles. But below the armor belt it's almost like we're sitting in a bit of a life raft, if you can imagine, or an inner tube. If you can picture almost a bit of an inner tube around the parts of the middle of the ship, not the stern and not the bow, but kind of in the middle, there's a little bit of a bulge. And that bulge is composed of empty compartments as you head in towards the ship. So you have, on the middle of the ship, it's 5 compartments, but where we were hit, there were 4 compartments. So the outer compartment is empty, then you have 2 compartments of fuel, and then the last inner compartment is empty. And so when it strikes the empty one, that absorbs a lot of energy. Then the 2 fuel ones, the kind of fuel we have is called Bunker C. It's very thick and viscous, like molasses or honey.
Okay.
It's so thick you have to heat it up to even use it. Okay, so it's almost like the torpedo slammed into 2 walls, and then it goes into yet another empty space. So all those 4 compartments taken together absorb a lot of energy, and the last bulkhead or wall is the torpedo bulkhead, and that held. So that system that the Navy designed worked. It actually took all that punishment, And it was fine. I mean, we took on an awful lot of water. I mean, lots and lots of water came in. But we only lost 5 people in spite of all that. So one person was taking a shower. 3 people were taking air tests. They were actually testing for air leaks, which is kind of ironic considering, because you want to make sure each compartment is airtight so that if you are torpedoed, each compartment is almost like its own little air pocket.
Okay.
You know, and it's tight and it keeps the ship afloat.
Okay.
So that's what they were doing. And one man was on the deck and he gets washed overboard.
Okay.
The interesting thing about the poor guy killed in the shower was he and his buddy were actually in a division that was associated with one of the big guns. And they had been doing their, you know, work assignments and whatever, and it's getting the end of the day, and they're hot and sweaty, and they decide they want to go take a shower. Well, a buddy of theirs calls and says, hey, guys, I got a couple of blueberry pies. You want them? This is a friend that works in the bakery. Well, who wouldn't want a couple of blueberry pies? So one decides he's going to go pick up the pies, and the other one's going to go take the shower first.
Oh.
And I met the man and told me he was saved by blueberry pies.
Wow. Wow.
So you just, that's, you know, amazing. You never know.
Yeah.
So that was our torpedoing, which was certainly, you know, wow. And I guess the next big thing like that that happened in terms of attacks and stuff was our friendly fire incident in 1945. And that was when there was a destroyer that was firing on a kamikaze, and suddenly we were kind of in the middle. So we get hit by another ship's 5-inch projectile, which then kills 3 and wounds 44 people.
Okay.
So that was devastating. The same day we had an accident with our Kingfisher float plane. We had 2 float planes on this ship during the war. We had 3 to begin with, but then they decide 2's enough, so they have 2. And they're trying to recover it out of the ocean, and it drops back down. Ooh. And the radioman gunner who was in the back of the plane, he got knocked out. He would have been up having to help hook the crane's hook, attach it to the aircraft to help lift up. And so he's knocked into the ocean, and he was a strong swimmer, but he must have gotten hit in the head and knocked out, and they never even found his body.
Oh, boy.
So that day we lost 4 people.
Huh.
So that was, you know, so that was another serious loss. By the end of the war, we're in over 50 separate battle engagements.
Okay.
Our float plane pilots do rescue people. That's one of the things they do. And one time they rescued 10 in one day, which is a very famous rescue. So we go to the war. We earn in the Pacific. We earn 15 battle stars. That's more than any other American battleship during World War II. But we were also first, so we kind of got, you know, a little head start on people. And the Washington she didn't tie with us because she had gotten some damage and had gone back for repairs, and she missed some of the opportunities that we had to earn more battle stars. So let's see, what else can I tell you? So at the end of the war, we come home. We end up ultimately in Boston for our, you know, for our hero's welcome at the end of the war. During the war, we had usually between 2,100 and 2,300 men on the ship. No women, of course, all men.
That many. Yes. That's a lot of people.
Yes.
Holy cow.
It's a lot of people.
Wow.
We end up with more than we were designed for, because one of the things that happened is we initially had something called 1.1 and 50 caliber guns, and they weren't, you know, they weren't that effective against aircraft. So they, when we went in for repairs at Pearl Harbor, they took all those guns off. They had already started putting 20 millimeter guns on the ship, so they put more 20s. They started adding 40 millimeter guns. We already had 16-inch guns, or the great big guns on the ship, and then we also, which are used for bombarding islands and sinking ships, and we had 5-inch guns, which were could help bombard islands, sink ships, and shoot down aircraft. Those were already on the ship, but when they added all these other smaller ships, they added more people.
Okay.
Put more people to run those, so we expanded the amount of crew on the ship, but everybody had a bed. Nobody had to share a bed. They call that hot bunking if you have to share a bed. But no, our guys all had a bed, and it was a floating city. So at the end of the war, they come home, and she continues to serve in the Navy for a couple more years. Mostly it's like a training vessel and stuff.
Okay.
And then in June of 47, she is struck from the Navy's list, and she goes into mothballs in Bayonne, New Jersey.
Hmm. Wow. And just sits there. Now, so
just sits there.
How did it end up coming back to North Carolina and turning it into a museum?
Okay, so that's the next part of the story. So back in the day, you mentioned this is the very early days of television. Wilmington has one TV station at that time, and a gentleman who worked there, of course, it's, you know, hearing news, you know, AP wire service, all that good stuff, and he hears about how Congress are going to strike the North Carolina and the Washington from the rolls. They're going to scrap them. They're going to come up for scrap. And Jimmy Craig was a member of American Legion Post 10 here in Wilmington, and he tells his other members of the Post that we just got to save this. You know, this is our state's namesake. We want to save it. Now, at that point, the USS Texas was already a museum ship down in Texas. She was a World War I era ship, and said, you know, we can do that. We can save this ship. So they put together a whole series of resolutions, which they share with the governor.
Okay.
And propose to him that we're going to, you know, let's try to save the ship. And the governor says, you know, that's not a bad idea. So let's go ahead and form a commission. I'm going to establish a commission, and we can do a study about bringing the ship to wherever. Okay. We were not the only place they looked at. So as I recall, the three cities they looked at were Morehead City, Wilmington, and Southport. So they considered three places. They had to think about where would be a safe place for the ship. They had to think about, you know, weathering storms and that kind of stuff.
Sure.
They also were thinking, Hugh Morton was the chairman of the commission. And Hugh Morton is a mighty smart man, just an amazing person. Google Hugh Morton, whoever's listening to this. If you don't know Hugh Morton, Google him. He's just absolutely amazing person. And Hugh and these guys, they're really smart, and they think about the whole tourism aspect. You know, this thing has got to, you know, think about how are we going to pay for this and everything, so that they want to make sure it's in a place that's going to get tourists. They want to make sure that it's a place where children from the state can learn about World War II and the sacrifices that were made. So they've thought about that. So they were just very smart. And they thought Wilmington, though, gosh knows back then, you know, the highway access was limited, but they felt that being up in Wilmington, you're miles up to Cape Fear River. So they thought from a storm perspective, that was a safer location for the ship.
Okay.
I don't know how much they looked at Myrtle. You know, I always think, thank goodness we are just north of Myrtle, because that's such a huge tourism destination, in addition to the beautiful beaches we already have here. It turned out to be a wonderful location, truly. They set out to go ahead, this commission to save the ship. I believe it might have been the governor, Hugh Morton. Somebody came up with the idea of involving school children.
Okay.
So they had, they sent out this wonderful poster featuring Hugh Morton's, one of his sons, Jim, to save the battleship. And if all the children in your school gave at least a dime, or there was enough money to figure out that all the children had contributed or whatever, you would get a ticket. And I believe your ticket was good for 5 years. Now, it was just good for you.
Wow.
Now, mom and dad and anybody else had to pay. But you got your little ticket. And they also had a campaign. It was called the Admirals of the North Carolina Navy. So if you gave $100 or raised $500, you were made an admiral in the North Carolina Navy. And that gave you lifetime admission to the ship. They made John Kennedy, who was president at that time, the first admiral.
Okay.
So it was a very successful campaign. They actually looked at all 100 counties, and they determined based on tax records about how much money they thought each county could raise.
Okay.
Which I thought was really smart.
Yeah.
And each county had a chairman, of course, to you know, beat the bushes and encourage people to give money. And so they did. They raised enough money. The Navy did give the ship to the state, but it had to be towed all the way down from Bayonne, New Jersey. You had to purchase land to put her on. You had to dredge out a berth to sit her in.
Okay.
You know, you can imagine all the things you would need to do to prepare something. But another interesting thing, the legislature set us up to be self-funded. So we are the state's World War II memorial for the more than 10,000 men and women from the state who died in the war.
Okay.
So, yes, we are a state museum. We're part of the Department of Natural and Cultural Resources, but we are self-funded, which means we do not get tax dollars. Worth repeating, folks, we do not get tax dollars. The only time the battleship gets tax money is we've had three campaigns. The first campaign was to save the ship, which, by the way, was not tax dollars in that one. So so we have got money when we have campaigns, but not the first one. The first one was totally grassroots, all funded by the citizens from this state and some people from outside the state. There were North Carolinians who sent money home, you know, to help save the ship. And then we had a campaign in the 90s to help with our teak deck. We had to replace the teak deck. And recently we had our Generations campaign, and that money was to restore the hull. We have some issues with the hull, so we're in the process right now of repairing the hull. I'd really like to plug Nucor Steel on our hull project, because thanks to them, they are donating all the steel needed. And we're just so thrilled that a North Carolina company would really step up to the plate in a major way. So I truly do want to give a shout out to Nucor Steel. So you all can be proud of a local company that's really doing great things for the battleship.
Awesome. That's excellent. They're right here in Charlotte. That's really neat that they're participating.
A state employees credit union, bless them, my bank, gave us money to build a gorgeous walkway. It's a beautiful memorial walkway to those North Carolinians who sacrificed their lives during the war. It's also, we think, in honor of our current men and women in the armed services from our state and who are in the state. It's a gorgeous walkway. It goes around almost the whole, well, it goes around the entire ship, but of course it doesn't go through the gift shop or anything like that. But, and it's free. That is free. You can walk on the walkway, and it's like, it's pretty wide. I know it's like 10 or 12 feet wide. It's pretty wide. And very lovely, goes out over the marsh. It's the most wonderful views of the ship and downtown Wilmington. Okay. Very pretty. So, and another thing I think that's surprising for people is the fact that we also have rental functions. That's another way we raise money. So not during COVID, but you can have corporate parties here. We have birthday parties. We have weddings. We have paranormal events. We have confined space entry training. For the military and other professionals that need that kind of training. I have to say we're also raising money for what's called Living with Water.
The ship, that?
Our parking lot goes underwater.
Oh, wow.
The road goes underwater. Our park sometimes goes underwater.
Oh, wow.
with climate change and everything, with the waters rising, and sometimes when they let out water from Jordan Lake and Raleigh area, or then there's a lot of rain and all the rest of it. We flood quite a bit.
Okay.
Yeah. So I now have boots in my car and in my office.
Smart move.
Just so you know. So we'd like money for that.
Okay.
So anybody wants to give to the ship, the money goes for our restoration fund to help maintain the ship, but also to help prepare as the water continues to rise.
Okay.
And we do have a wonderful environmental firm that's engaged to plan that. We hope to turn part of our parking lot back into a wetlands.
Oh, wow, okay.
To channel the water. Mother Nature is Mother Nature, but what we're hoping to do is channel the water in terms of the flow.
Okay.
And so it should be very lovely. Okay. And I think be a fine example to others of how you can work with the environment.
Okay.
And so we're excited about that.
So what year did the battleship officially open as a museum?
That's right. I guess I didn't get to that. So it came here in October. Hello, just skip right over that. It arrived in Wilmington in October of 1961.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it had been there that long.
So next October is our 60th anniversary being in Wilmington.
Okay.
It'll be this April will be the ship's 80th birthday.
Wow.
So, 20 years after she was born, so to speak, she came to Wilmington.
Okay. Wow, that's quite a journey. We're speaking with Kim Sincox. She is the Museum Services Director for the battleship USS North Carolina, which, of course, is permanently anchored in Wilmington. We're going to take a short break right now, but when we come back, we'll hear more about the USS North Carolina and the new programs people can attend virtually. Stay with us.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Well, welcome back to Carolina Focus on this New Year's weekend. Carolina Focus is heard on our radio.com stations here in Charlotte. It's News Talk 1110-993 WBT, 107.9 The Link, 102.5-610 Sports Radio WFNZ, along with Sharon Thorsland. I'm Ed Billick as we enter our second year here on Carolina Focus. You know, folks, we got some great, great interviews coming up. NASCAR Hall of Fame. The Red Wolves and the amount of Red Wolves down there in Union County. We got some local baseball stories I think you'll find interesting. How about restaurant openings? During this COVID time, yes, people are opening up new eateries, new restaurants, all being so very safe. But here's my request to all of you. If you have any local interest stories, anything health-related, sports activities-related, hiking trails, things for the families to do, anything you would like to advertise or hype up. Just like this segment here, we're talking on the Battleship North Carolina down in Wilmington. Anything in North Carolina, anything to do in South Carolina. If you have relatives that have a profession that you find very interesting. I mean, this past year I had my brother on who's a funeral director. Get insights to different professions, insights into different work environments. Anything that would be kind of public affairs related that may attract a listener, and it may be educational as well, send it to me, please. I'd love to hear from you. Here's my email address. It is ed.billick@radio-1.com. Let's do that again. ed.billick@radio-1.com. And send me your thoughts. Send me your ideas. We'd love to hear from you. Now let's get back with Sharon and her interview right here on Carolina Focus.
Welcome back to Carolina Focus. I'm Sharon Thorsland. This morning we're talking about a landmark here in North Carolina. It's the battleship USS North Carolina, which is permanently anchored in Wilmington. We've heard about the history of the famous battleship. Now we're going to hear about how you can learn more about the ship in a new series of online programs that start next weekend. We're joined by Kim Sincox. She is the Museum Services Director for the USS North Carolina. Kim, thanks again for being with us today. Before the break, we were talking about the ship becoming a museum. And I know lots of people visit it now. I've been there myself as a child. And about how many people in a non-coronavirus year, about how many people visit the ship every year?
Now, I'm not the marketing person, but I think it's between around 250,000, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It could. And don't hold me to that one because, again, I'm not marketing. We do keep exact figures of everything.
But a lot.
We have
one
a lot
way or the other. It's a lot.
We have a lot. We do pay our way. We do earn enough money to actually pay our way. We do have a small staff. There's only like 25 or 26 staff.
Okay.
So it's a very tiny staff. I mean, some of the other museum ships have well over 100 staff. We have 25 or 26.
Wow.
So I'm a department of one. I mean, a lot of us are departments of one.
Okay.
But one of the things that makes us such a wonderful place is that we have a lot of volunteers.
Okay.
I think I have over 170 volunteers now.
Oh, wow.
Now, granted, not everybody's as active, but on a month-to-month basis, we have anywhere from 85 to 95 volunteers. We have one group that comes on Wednesdays, and they chip and paint and chip and chip and paint. They also have carpentry skills and electrical skills and all kinds of things that they do on the ship that's magnificent. We have another group called a cleaning crew that comes on Thursdays, and they keep the ship all spick and span.
Okay.
So she looks wonderful. And then we have, gosh, I know it's well over 100 now, volunteers who work with programs. So we have programs for school children, for families. We have adult-only programs. We also have a program for the military. They're called PMEs, Professional Military Education. We do quite a few for the Marines, but we also get folks coming from Fort Bragg as well.
Oh, wow.
To take advantage of these programs.
Well, speaking of programs, let's get into those a little bit here. We're speaking with Kim Sincox. She is the Museum Services Director for the Battleship North Carolina, which is, of course, down in Wilmington. And we've just heard a lot about the history of the USS North Carolina. Now we're going to talk about some of the neat programs that you guys have come up with in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic. If you can't go to the ship, which I understand you still are welcoming visitors just in a reduced capacity. Is that?
Yes, yes, yes. The ship is open. Everything is open now, top to bottom. We do not let people in our exhibit hall area, one of our permanent exhibits, which is nice, and we're sad about that. But for right now, that's not open. So you come into the front, you go through the gift shop, and then you go up the ramp onto the ship. But everything on the ship that's normally open is open.
Okay. Okay. Well,
365 days a year, 365
really?
Days a year, including Christmas Day. We
wow.
now open at noon. When I first wow. came here, we opened at 8 o'clock in the morning on Christmas Day. Now
oh
it's
my
noon.
Goodness. Wow. Who knew? I didn't
yep.
realize that. Well, for people that can't get to the museum right now or don't feel comfortable actually going to the ship, I know you've got this new program called Meet the Showboat. Can you tell us, first of all, how'd you come up with that idea and what's the purpose of it?
As you can imagine, following, you know, when the coronavirus came and everybody's all of a sudden things were shutting down, museums all over the country, of course, were thinking in terms of virtual programs. And some museums were already doing them, mm-hmm. especially, for instance, in North Carolina, the state museums have a mandate to reach out to the entire state.
Okay.
So they've already been embarking on those kind of virtual programs. We had not been doing as many of those because, first of all, we have a very tiny staff. And we have to earn our own money. So we tend to do programs for which we charge a fee or programs which bring people physically to the ship where they pay admission.
Okay.
So we were new at this sort of virtual programming stuff. But we were encouraged by the Department of Natural and Cultural Resources for everybody to jump in there and help provide programs for the citizens in this state. And my colleague, Mary Ames Booker, our curator, applied for a grant. It was the NC Cares grant through the Humanities Council, and that funding is to the National Endowment for the Humanities,
okay.
who distributed funds to the different states to then distribute to others. So we applied for a grant, and it's for four things for us. So one of them is our podcast. So we have a podcast called the Showboat Podcast.
Okay.
So if you like podcasts, please look up the Showboat Podcast. We have our first two podcasts out, and they're just delightful. So enjoy those. We have Meet the Showboat, which I'll discuss. We have Discover the Showboat, which I'm working on actually learning how to make films.
Oh, wow.
Martin Scorsese has nothing to fear, I can tell you. but I nevertheless, I'm learning to create films. So those will be out as I do those. We also have another one. And this morning, if I had printed them all out, I'd tell you all the names. Examine the Showboat. Examine the Showboat is the one where we bought scanners, and Mary Ames and two of our volunteers are scanning like crazy, hundreds of documents, and people will be able to explore those on what we're going to call Examine the Showboat. So we have Discover
okay.
the Showboat, Meet the Showboat, Discover the Showboat, and the Showboat Podcast. Those are the
wow.
four things we've got. And Meet the Showboat. And I've had other programs called Meet the Showboat. But Meet the Showboat is a chance for people to sign up for they can sign up for all seven programs or any one of the seven programs. They're all free. They are produced by our volunteers. What happened was we already have adult programs, and I knew some of the volunteers already had PowerPoints mm-hmm. for some different topics. Ship-related, of course, and we actually thought of some other topics and approached volunteers and said, would you mind doing this, that, and the other? So what we have going for us, starting January the 9th, we're starting off with a Meet the Showboat, A Brief History,
okay.
and that's by Rear Admiral Ron Henderson. Ron Henderson is these are all marvelous volunteers. Ron is the volunteer who trains all of our volunteer tour guides. Ron
okay.
is a frequent speaker throughout two counties, and just marvelous. He just gave a whole series on battles in the Pacific for our local Ollie at UNCW, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. And I took those. Fantastic class. Anyway, so he's doing The Brief History of the Ship on Saturday, January the 9th. Then January 23rd, he'll have another program called City at Sea. Life Aboard. Wow. So that's for everyone to learn, what is it like to live aboard a battleship? So that's City at Sea, Life Aboard, January 23rd.
So now, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Did he experience this kind of thing? Has he been to sea and sort of, been there, done that kind of guy?
So, yes, Ron Henderson's a fighter pilot.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool in and of itself.
Yeah, yeah.
But Ron ended up being, he was the commanding officer of the aircraft carrier John F. Kennedy.
Oh,
among
wow.
his other commands. So, yes, wow. he was the head of an aircraft carrier. That's doesn't get much bigger than that.
Wow.
But, yeah, so many, many years of service. So lots of real-life experience aboard ships. So he really knows what he's talking about. Obviously, he's not of the World War II generation, much younger. But, yes, but life aboard ships doesn't – humans are humans, you know.
Right, right.
Confirming, you know, all the basics of eating, sleeping, going to the bathroom, et cetera. And so, yes, he really knows what he's talking about. And then we have, in February, we have Engineered for Victory, Design and Technology. The ship really is an engineering wonder. People don't realize she made her own fresh water. She made her own electricity.
Wow.
They use mechanical
wow.
analog computers to aim and fire the guns.
Wow.
She had four engine rooms, two propellers. It's just amazing. She had the synchro servers, which were kind of new. There was a cafeteria that was new. She had a scullery, a dishwashing machines. That was kind of a new thing. I mean, all this good stuff on the ship. So John is going to talk about that. And John is a lieutenant colonel, U.S. Marine Corps retired, marvelous volunteer. In fact, John is also giving two programs in February. So one is Engineered for Victory, Design and Technology. The second is the Few, the Proud, BB-55 Marine Detachment. The battleship actually had its own Marine detachment. They had about 85 Marines on the ship at any given time. So he's going to discuss their role on the ship.
Okay.
Then in March, we have two programs on what we call fire control. Now, on a ship, fire control is not putting out fires. Putting out fires is damage control.
Oh,
fire control is gunfire control. How do you make sure your weapons are hitting their – acquire their targets and then hit their targets? Hang on. I'm going to cough. Excuse me. So we have two different volunteers presenting those programs. So Saturday, March 13, we have Alex Dodula. Alex was in the Army, but we still let him play. We let all branches of service play aboard the battleship. Alex is an absolute genius when it comes to the mechanical aspects of the ship, especially the technologies involving these fire control systems. That's become a real passion of his. So the first one, March 13, is called The Mechanical Brains Behind the Guns. So Alex is going to talk about and help explain the fire control systems aboard the ship that were quite sophisticated for the time. In fact, those computers were so good that in the Gulf War, for those of us old enough to remember, there was a Gulf War.
Yep.
1991 in that time frame, Gulf War. The battleships that were used, that were pulled, you know, the same World War II battleships that were called up to help serve during that conflict used the same World War II computers.
Really?
Good enough. They could still fire around every 30 seconds.
That's
so
amazing.
Same computers.
Wow.
The story was they actually got some of the older sailors to come and show the new sailors, this is how you use it.
Okay.
So that's March the 13th. And then March 27, Commander Chuck Gore, also another fine Navy veteran who served on five surface ships, also a graduate of Chapel Hill's ROTC program.
Which
apparently used to graduate more naval officers than anywhere else other than the academy.
Huh. Wow.
A little bit of trivia for the day.
Commander
Chuck Gore is going to – yay, go Tar Heels. So Commander Chuck Gore is going to talk about fire control, the human element.
Okay.
What about the men behind these, you know, all these computer systems and stuff? And so that's he's going to talk about the gunnery department, its mission, and how tactics changed during the war years.
Okay.
And in fact, Chuck was here yesterday with a film crew developing a video tour of the ship. And he's just marvelous because once he got through his Navy career, he actually ends up becoming a second grade teacher.
Oh, boy.
Yes, yes. And so he's just a marvelous presenter. And then our final offering at this point is called Legacies of the North Carolina. And that is Lieutenant Commander Mike Bowers. And Mike was a submarine officer.
Okay.
And I just love submarines too. Because, you know, we have, in case anybody doesn't know, there is a submarine North Carolina currently serving. And she is home ported out of Pearl Harbor.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And she's, as I think of her, she's our baby.
Okay.
There have been several North Carolinas. You know, I didn't even talk about that. You know, there have been, but we can get back to that. But anyway, so Mike Bowers is going to help talk about these. Well, I guess I can talk about it now a little bit because that's the topic of his program, Legacies of the North Carolina. So there was a sailing ship, North Carolina, and she served our country from 1824 to 1867. A beautiful, beautiful, yes. Oh, this gorgeous, gorgeous sailing ship. Just marvelous. And in her mature years, I mean, 1824 to 1867 is a long time to be in service. So at the end of her life, she is stationed in New York City, and she is a receiving ship for Navy and Marine recruits during the Civil War.
Wow.
Yes. And while that was going on, there was also an ironclad North Carolina that was built here in Wilmington.
Okay.
On the side of the Confederacy. So as I like to think of, we had a North Carolina on each side of the war.
Of the, interesting.
Yes, of the late great unpleasantness. We had one on either side of that, of the conflict. Yes. And then there was an armored cruiser, North Carolina, and she served from 1908 to 1921.
Okay.
The armored cruiser was the first ship to catapult launch an aircraft while underway.
Wow.
And that was in November of 1915.
Wow.
So that was a big deal. She was a way of proving that that was possible. They had actually they launched a plane from a ship when it wasn't moving, but to actually, while the ship is moving through the water, to catapult launch a plane, that North Carolina, she took the claim for that one. She also helped bring back many troops after World War One.
Okay.
So she transported people back after World War One. She brought back the bodies from remember the Maine, bodies that were sunk when the Maine went down. Well, she went to Cuba and brought the bodies back, ones that they could reclaim. So she brought bodies back from there. She took President-elect Taft to see the Panama Canal. She did all kinds of neat stuff. So, that was the armored cruiser. Then we, of course, have our beloved battleship.
Right.
And we have the new submarine, North Carolina. So
there's
quite a legacy. So Lieutenant Commander Mike Bowers is going to address those legacies on Saturday, April 17th.
Okay. Wow.
So all
really
those programs.
Neat programs.
Yes. Yes. So we think they should be fun. They are free. There's no charge. They all start at 2 p.m. And we did that to give an opportunity in terms of various time zones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Not just in America, but for friends abroad, we have people that come from all over the world to visit the battleship.
Okay. Now,
so
there are
battleship geeks worldwide.
Okay. Well, one of the neat things that I think about the program is that it's interactive. So you can actually ask questions and stuff. It's not just a recorded show.
Correct. This is live. These are live presentations. We may record them at some point, but at this point, these are live. So yes, I will be at each one of these programs, and there will be at the chat box. These are via Zoom.
Okay.
And so I will be monitoring the chat box. We will have time at the end for questions and answers and addressing people's questions in the chat box and this sort of thing. So, yes, we're very much want to hear from our listeners, and we're hoping that people will be intrigued enough to come visit the ship. And when we get back to the non-COVID world, or at least the controlled COVID world, where we can have our adult programs again, we would love to have people because we have these marvelous behind-the-scenes adult programs that these gentlemen are all a part of, those programs.
Wow. It seems like this is at least a good stand-in until we can get back to that point, just to be able to ask. I mean, those the people that you just discussed, the people that are going to be leading these presentations, I mean, they must have some unbelievable stories. So to be able to ask them questions and stuff seems like a really, really neat opportunity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because all of these men, they love the ship. They're very enthusiastic. They're all very knowledgeable folks. And they create their own PowerPoints. It's not like I'm not spoon-feeding these people. There's not a script. I don't give them their programs. I mean, they do their own research and put together these PowerPoints, and they're excellent. They're really excellent.
So if people are interested in registering for the programs, how can they go about doing that?
So that's on our website, which is www.battleshipnc.com, just battleshipnc.com. And to the right side, you'll see it says Meet the Showboat. Okay. And so you do register because, as you know, with Zoom, there's a limit to how many people can, you know, sign up.
Right.
I don't think there's going to be a problem, but, you know, I would love for there to be a problem with that. I'd love for it to about fill up. But, yes, it's they're there. They're free. But you do need to register for okay. those programs so that we know who all's coming.
Okay. Will you record the presentation? So if people were not able to attend one live, would you be able to access the recorded version of it at some point down the road? Do you know?
Well, what we're contemplating is if these are popular, what I would like to do is go ahead and schedule them again for as okay. live presentations with the idea of probably of recording them and maybe making them available upon demand.
Okay. Okay. What a great idea.
We all enjoy live presentations because you want to be able to, you know, ask the questions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it sounds like you guys have some really neat stuff coming up down there at the Battleship. And what a neat place to go and see. And I remember going there maybe I was in fourth or fifth grade or something. But this certainly has piqued my interest again. And I hope to get down there again at some point, maybe in the summer, and check out the USS Northtown again. Because what a neat, just a wonderful educational opportunity just to see something of that size and the history of it and everything. Just seems like it's a really neat opportunity for people in North Carolina and, like you said, all over the country and the world.
It is fun. And one of the things that I think people enjoy that comes as a surprise is a number of years ago with the labels, the signage on the ship, I included stories. So when you go on the ship, it isn't just about the technology. So when you come okay. to the ship, I think of us kind of like Biltmore East. You know, okay. so when you go there, we're like, it's like coming to somebody's house.
Okay.
So think of the ship as it's a large home or a city at sea. And when you're coming aboard, it's not the signs and things are not about the battles and as much. It's about who lived here. It's a bunch okay. of teenagers. I think of us as a giant floating frat party. Really, it's a bunch of guys. They're between the ages of 17 and 21 years old.
Wow.
Right. Far from home. No girlfriends, no mom, whatever, you know, just a bunch of guys, at sea, and they're doing their jobs, but they're also trying to live a life and have some fun. Could be illegal gambling games, could be making illegal hooch, whatever they've got going on, or playing AC Ducey or watching movies, playing checkers and chess, all that kind of stuff, just to, you know, entertain themselves. They had shows, they would dress up like hula girls, tap dance, tell jokes, I mean, all this sort of stuff, have shows. And it's just marvelous. And so I want people to feel that when they come on the ship. So there are stories okay. all over the ship in Carolina Blue, no less. You can read stories from the crew.
Okay.
And I think that helps to bring the ship to life for people to realize these are just young men
yeah.
taking care of a very expensive piece of equipment. I think about our military today. You get these young people with a lot on their shoulders using very expensive equipment, just trying to do their jobs and help protect themselves and their fellow sailors and military personnel, because when you're in the middle of it, you're not thinking about mom and apple pie. You're thinking about protecting yourself and your friends. If you're on a ship, you want to make sure it doesn't sink, kind of thing.
Right.
But I think it's really when you come to the ship, it's an idea of put yourself in their shoes. What job did you want on the ship? Would you like to be a gunner's mate? Or maybe you could end up in the bakery or in accounting or in the computers. I mean, someplace that might have future prospects.
Yeah.
You know, after the Navy, because when they went in at that time, they didn't know there would be a GI Bill.
Okay.
I mean, they had no idea that maybe some of them would have the chance to go to college. Mm-hmm. You know, so many men that had never had the chance to never thought they would have a chance to go to school, of course, or able to after the war to take advantage of the GI Bill. But, you know, that you're talking the Depression. They felt good just to have three square meals a day and clothes and all of that. So,
wow, some neat stories and history with that. So, well, Kim, thank you so much for joining us today and telling us all about just the ship and then these really neat programs that you guys have coming up. If you want to register for the programs, again, you go to www.battleshipnc.com and click on the Meet the Showboat tab, and you can register for these 7 virtual sessions that are going to be coming up starting in January. So, Kim, thank you once again for joining us today. We really appreciate your time. Such great, interesting stories you've told us.
Thank you. I enjoyed virtually being in my old stomping grounds.
Right down the road in Gastonia. We've been speaking with Kim Sincox. She is the Museum Services Director for the Battleship North Carolina. Kim, thanks very much for being with us today.